So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam translations and purports by His Divine Grace, Mr. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Sarasutim Vyasam Vato Jaya Mudindaya Nastavaya Vishwa Vato Shunityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Dhamma Shloke Bhakti Bhagavati Naishtiki.
We are reading from the second canto, first chapter, fourth text.
Dehavatya Gata Vishu
Dehavatya
Gata Vishu
Persons devoid of Atma Tattva do not inquire into the problems of life, being too attached to the fallible soldiers like the body, children, and wife. Although sufficiently experienced, they still do not see their inevitable destruction. Responsibly. Persons devoid of Atma Tattva.
Persons devoid of Atma Tattva.
Do not inquire
into
the problems of life.
To the problems of life.
Being too attached.
Being too attached.
To the fellow soldiers.
To the fellow soldiers.
Like the body.
Like the body.
Children and wife.
Children and wife.
Although sufficiently experienced.
Although sufficiently experienced.
They still do not see.
Do not see.
Their inevitable destruction.
Their inevitable destruction.
Prepared by Srila Prabhupada. This material world is called the world of death. Every living being, beginning from Brahma, whose duration of life is some thousands of millions of years, down to the germs who live for a few seconds only, is struggling for existence. Therefore, this life is a sort of fight with material nature, which imposes death upon all. Is there a Bhagavad Gita? I want to read something from it. In the human form of life, a living being is confident enough to come to an understanding of this great struggle for existence. By being too attached to family members, society, country, etc., he wants to win over the invincible material nature by the aid of bodily strength, children, wife, relatives, etc. Although he is sufficiently experienced in the matter by dint of past experience and previous examples of his deceased predecessors, he does not see that the so-called fighting soldiers, like the children, relatives, society members, and countrymen, are all valuable in the great struggle. One should examine the fact that his father, or his father's father, has already died, and that he himself is therefore also sure to die. And similarly, his children, who are the would-be fathers of their children, will also die in due course. No one will survive in this struggle with material nature. The history of human society definitely proves it. Yet the foolish people still suggest that in the future they will be able to live perpetually with the help of material science. This poor kind of knowledge exhibited by human society is certainly misleading, and it is all due to ignoring the constitution of the living soul. This material world exists only as a dream due to our attachment to it. Otherwise, the living soul is always different from the material nature. The great ocean of material nature is tossing with the waves of time, and the so-called living conditions are something like foaming bubbles which appear before us as bodily self, wife, children, society, countrymen, etc. Due to a lack of knowledge of self, we become victimized by the force of ignorance, and thus spoil the valuable energy of human life in a vain search after permanent living conditions, which are impossible in this material world. Our friends, relatives, and so-called wives and children are not only valuable, but also bewildered by the outward glamour of material existence. As such, they cannot save us. Still, we think that we are safe within the orbit of family, society, or country. The whole materialistic advancement of human civilization is like the decoration of a dead body. Everyone is a dead body, flapping only for a few days. And yet, all the energy of human life is being wasted in the decoration of this dead body. Shukadeva Goswami is pointing out the duty of the human being after showing the actual position of bewildered human activities. Persons who are devoid of the knowledge of Atma Tattva are misguided. But those who are devotees of the Lord and have perfect realization of transcendental knowledge are not bewildered. Om Gyanati Manasya Kamasya Salakaya Shastra Nilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Guru Namaha Sri Chaitana Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutaro Yisvayam Rupakatam Mayam Tarati Svabarantikam. So it is by the mercy of the great predecessor Charles like Srila Prabhupada that even the dumb can speak and the lame can climb mountains. So we endeavor to speak from Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavatam with the assurance that he is always behind us. This is a very famous verse. It's quoted again and again that persons who are devoid of Atma Tattva cannot depend on fellow soldiers of the family, of their friends, of their compatriots, wife and children. And even though experienced, they don't see their inevitable destruction. That is the great wonder of human life, as I mentioned previously. When Yudhisthira was questioned by Yamaraj as to what is the great wonder, he said, the wonder is that we see death all around us, but we don't think we're going to die. There was an American novelist named William Soraya who was afflicted with cancer and told that he only had a few days to live. And it is when he realized he had only a few more hours to live, because he was a public figure, he made a telephone call to the Associated Press to get his exit statement, his final speech. And he said that I've written many books, and people know my name everywhere, and I always thought that I was going to be immortal, but now I know I'm not immortal. So now my one question to the world is, what next? So nobody knows, and nobody really thinks that they're going to die. The quest for immortality is very great. Immortality, I should say. Immortality is very great. Everyone wants to be this way. So this is an indication of our immortality, that we're not actually going to die, we're going to live on. So persons who are knowledgeable, who actually have a sense of Atma Tattva, who have a sense of the soul and its constitution. They are not bewildered by this change of body. So transcendentalist is always preparing for the inevitable. Prabhupada once said, he's reputed to have said, that we are the greatest opportunists. So we want to take advantage of everything, including the death experience, to go to a greater, a higher, a better existence. Even if we have to come back to this material world, we certainly want to get a body that's not going to experience so much pain or so much difficulty. But those who are infused with Atmatattva, they know that they should attain the spiritual world, not get another material body, but the spiritual bodies, which is free from birth, age, birth, death, disease, and old age, free from pain and suffering. If they can attain the spiritual world, we have no experience of the spiritual world or anything, all good. Everybody in this material world thinks that into every life submarine must fall. There has to be bad with good, otherwise we're just unreal escapists. That is the Mammonist philosophy, that there is no such thing as all good. Everything must be a mixture of good and bad. This material world, Prabhupada writes, is called the world of death. I think the Pope called the West the culture of death. Yeah, it was quoted as saying the world is, the West is the culture of death, the culture of how the West is, it's invading everywhere. Blue jeans and rock music and hamburgers. When I first went to the Soviet, former Soviet Union, 1991, it was at the time when communism was coming to an end. And the great so-called culture of the West was coming to the former Soviet Union. Now, what was this culture? Well, this culture brought with it more crime, more gambling, more meat eating, more pornography. It became unsafe to walk the streets of Moscow in the evening. This is what was referred to as the culture of death. So, in a sense, there was great freedom after 7 years of suppression and fear, and people still don't want to go back to that. And yet it's dangerous. There's gunfights that were never before experienced in the streets of Moscow. So with freedom came so many anomalies. With the so-called culture of death came so many difficulties. So Prabhupada calls it the world of death. And he gave the example once of how hard people work so that they can at weekends take shelter of the valuable soldiers. They have pictures on their desks. I'm not saying this is necessarily wrong, but he just gave this illustration of the family members. And they work very hard. They punch in at 9 o'clock or whatever, and they punch out at 5 o'clock. And they're working very hard so that for a few days, for the weekend, they're meditating on their fellow soldiers, that they can have pleasure. They can have some relief from this hard work, and it sustains them. They can work very hard because they know that they're going to be able to have a safe haven at the end. They're going to go out and maybe they're going to put their hands in their allotment, or maybe they're going to go out and have some family fun. But they're going to take shelter of their members of their family. And this is a very sort of cutting verse because it describes that just like the tin soldiers, they'll all fall down. Everybody has to die. It's not really, really the shelter. It's not really the protection. It's not really the bliss that is required by the soul. The soul wants eternity. The soul wants knowledge. The soul wants bliss. The soul wants a permanent situation. So as Prabhupada states here, one who is intelligent will look into this matter and try to understand what the nature, what the constitution of the soul is to be permanently happy. He says, every living being from Brahma, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punaravartana Arjuna, Mahopetya Kuntala Punarjana Vijite, whose duration of life is millions of years down to the Indragopa germ, or the germ, the ant, of a being that lives a little bacteria that may live for just a few seconds, there is no happiness. So Prabhupada writes that this is a sort of fight with material nature. Everyone realizes that there is a struggle. Even Darwin, who proposed the idea of evolution, said that there is a struggle. Everyone is struggling against material nature. But as people became more so-called advanced, and their technology became prominent, they began to think that they could conquer over death. And as Prabhupada writes, the science people, many, they think they actually will be able to conquer over death. They believe that. There's a study of gerontology, billions of dollars or whatever are spent every year to make human beings immortal. Not just with life support systems, but they really believe that people will be able to live and live and live forever for hundreds of years. Of course, yogis can do this also. Many of the mystic siddhis that are talked about in the shastras are practicable now. It's like the acquisition. You can get something from a faraway place. The Prabhupada talked about the yogi can do his house without a pomegranate from Afghanistan. But now you can do it with your computer. You can go into a library in Tokyo or New York and you can get the reference you need just by pushing a few buttons. It's there and you just print it out. So it's not so magical. It's not so wonderful. I mean, people say this is magic. They're very fond of that word, the magic of the age, or the magic of flying, the magic of communication, the magic of computers. Well, what about the magic of the yogis? They can do the same things without having to spend so many thousands of what they call man-hours doing it, building the corporations. Of course, they had to undergo similar kinds of austerities and penances. But they're not wonderful things. Prabhupada likened these airplanes to the mosquitoes. Mosquitoes are flying around all jumbled up in front of the fan or in front of the light. And they've been going in all different directions. And yet they never bump into each other. So without all the machinery required to fly a big airplane, they do this and they don't collide with one another. Even the airplane sometimes. You have to be very careful because sometimes they do collide. So people are thinking it's very wonderful. They're going to live forever. One of the principals of one of the big drug companies, I don't remember which one, Roche, I think it was. One Rothschild family wrote a little piece, a kind of op-ed piece in one of the newspapers. And he was convinced that it would just be a matter of time and people would be able to replicate any sensation simply by taking a pill. If you like water skiing, you could take a pill. If you like swimming, you could take a pill and reproduce the exact sensation as water skiing or swimming or slope skiing, snow skiing, or driving a car, or being out on a family picnic. And this is the research that people are spending billions and billions and billions on to find out how to reproduce any sensation by just taking a pill. What to speak of? Conquering death. They were absolutely convinced that they'll be able to conquer death. Just a matter of time. People are living longer, they say, now than they ever were. They're healthier, and they'll be able to conquer death. So, what does Prabhupada say about the places of misery? The purport to that verse, Prabhupada says, in the purport, all kinds of yogis, karma, jnana, hatha, etc., eventually have to attain devotional perfection in bhakti yoga, or Krishna consciousness, before they can go to Krishna's transcendental abode and never return. Those who attain the highest material planets, the planets of the demigods, are again subject to repeated birth and death. As persons on earth are elevated to higher planets, people on higher planets, such as Brahmaloka, Chandraloka, and Indraloka, fall down to earth. The practice of sacrifice, called Panjangi Vidya, recommended in the Chandogya Upanishad, enables one to achieve Brahmaloka. But if on Brahmaloka one does not cultivate Krishna consciousness, then he must return to earth. Those who progress in Krishna consciousness on the higher planets are gradually elevated to higher and higher planets, and at the time, universal devastation are transferred to the eternal spiritual kingdom. Sridhar Swami, in his commentary on Bhagavad Gita, quotes this verse, Brahmanaha satate sarva, brahm pratye pratis nache, parasyante pritatmana, pravishanti parambadam. When there is devastation of this material universe, Brahma and his devotees, who are constantly engaged in Krishna consciousness, are all transferred to the spiritual universe and to specific spiritual planets according to their desires. In earlier times, when Prabhupada was on 26th Second Avenue, he emphasized how important it was to not be attached to anything in the material world. That one should see the material world as a temporary place, that one should cross over it. And he pinned on a piece of paper the Bhagavatam verse, Samastritaye Padapalava Bhavan. Param punya yasho morare. Param param vatsa param 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 yadhi padamate shaman. His translation was that those who take shelter of the boat of the feet of the transcendental personality of Godhead Krishna, who is known as morare, are fixed in the Vaikuntha world. Their consciousness, who are fixed in that consciousness, the consciousness of the spiritual world like Kunta, can easily, in that boat, cross over the great ocean of material existence, which is the place of danger at every step. They can cross over it very easily because that great ocean of material existence becomes like the water in the hoof print of a calf. So very early on, Prabhupada was teaching us that the material world is a temporary place. It's a very dangerous place. As Prabhupada points out here, there are waves tossing one about in the material world constantly. It's very dangerous. If you're out in the ocean and you're in a storm or there's big waves, you won't survive very long at all. But that great turbulent ocean is like the water in a calf's hoof print for one who is fixed on the place of no anxiety, like Kunta, and is taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. That is the boat which can cross over this great ocean of material existence. And those who take shelter of that boat have no anxiety. They're free from that anxiety because they're fixed on the place of no anxiety. Their minds are fixed. So that is really samadhi or meditation. To think about the spiritual world all the time. Or as Rupa Goswami said, to always remember Krishna and never forget him. To be fixed on meditation. Where our real home is, where our real shelter is, where our real place is, it's not this material world. So transcendence is, as the Bible says, in the world, not of concentrating on the spiritual world and maneuvering through this material world very easily, just like a boat that can cross over. The Vedic Prabhupada once said, in Manjit 1973, are like the manual. It teaches us how to deal with this material world. We wouldn't unpack and start using this microphone, or a computer, or a tape recorder, or anything else, without reading the manual first. So we do, if we're going on instinct, we're wasting our time, we're going to find some problems that we can't overcome. If we read it first, we know how to properly use the machine. Some machines we can't even begin to understand unless we read the manual. So this material world is also like that. We can't begin to understand how it works. How it's not really what it appears to be. It's really something very different. People are sometimes, you know, they're afraid of their computers because they're just a big mass of machinery. And we're, you know, they're afraid to push the buttons. So we should have a kind of healthy fear of the material world. It is kind of baffling. It's not really what it looks like. We have to know how to maneuver through it. And the Vedas give us that opportunity. Especially the Srimad Bhagavatam. It not only teaches us how to maneuver through it, but to get over to the other side. If it's just the Vedas we're interested in, the Jnana Kanda, the Karma Kanda, they will teach us how to live in the material world. But a transcendentalist wants to get beyond the material world, is really fixed on going to the higher level of existence. So that is the meaning of Atmatattva. To read Srimad Bhagavatam regularly, to want to hear and to relish the Srimad Bhagavatam, that is the highest goal of life. someone who wants no other subject matter for hearing. We were discussing the other day how everyone wants to hear news of the world, read the newspapers. But the real news is of the spiritual world. That's the real news. Prabhupada calls it the vain search for living conditions, for proper living conditions, for permanent living conditions. The vain search. Vain means that we will never get a permanent place. There are so many pseudo-transcendentalists who are talking about making this world perfect, that God will come back or Christ will come back and everything's going to be fine here. And there's one religion that talks about how you're going to see your mother and father up in heaven and they're all going to be there. I saw one film in one of their places. And heaven was a big coffee shop. And all of a sudden, mom and dad were coming in, grandpa and grandma, auntie and uncle were coming into the coffee shop. That's heaven. But there's no permanent kind of situation, really. Everyone has their karmas of the God. Prabhupada gave the example of the airplanes. When one is in trouble, they may be flying in formation. But when the engine coughs out of one airplane, that's it. You're going to bail out. So the material world is something that we should have a healthy kind of attitude towards and realize that it's not our real place. Srimad Bhagavatam was recommended by Lord Chaitanya to be read daily. It's like taking a bath, reading the Bhagavatam. We go out of the material world and we get dirty and we come back and we bathe every day. So the Bhagavatam is like the bath of the mind. We'll go out to preach or whatever, and we have to associate with so much material, with so many material minds, with so many material things, with such a material atmosphere. And then every day we can bathe the mind. I think, was it Emerson or Thoreau used that word? He bathes his mind in the Bhagavad Gita, in the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita every day. It was quoted in the back of one of our books. So this is like our bath. It's not a bath. So the cleansing process, Chaitanya Bhagavatam Rasa, we hear it every day. Lord Chaitanya said the Bhagavatam is the perfect literature. You know, we never tire of hearing it. We never tire. There was a story of a gentleman in Calcutta who was a scholar. I think he was a judge at one time. And he had shelves all over all the walls, books piled on books. He was known for having so many books and knowing the contents of all these books. And one day, one of his friends was walking by the house and saw a big pile of books out on the sidewalk. And he looked up and he saw that this man was throwing books out of the second story, just tossing them out. He was astonished, so he went up and said, "What are you doing?" And he saw that all the books on the shelf were empty. He was just throwing them all away, one after the other. "What are you doing?" And he said, "I decided that it's all useless. It's all completely garbage. I'm throwing it all away." And then he noticed there was one book on the shelf. That was the Bhagavad Gita. I think his Bhagavatams were on the other side of the room. And he said, "This is the only book that I want to keep." This Prabhupada told this story. "This is the only book I can read over and over again and get some new impression out. Every time I read it, it's new and it's fresh." So just as Krishna is not beyond the Bhagavatam, it's always fresh. Wherever we open it, wherever we read it, we get transcendental knowledge. Prabhupada writes, "No one will survive in this struggle with material nature. The history of human society proves it, yet the poorest people still suggest that in future they will be able to live perpetually with help of material science." The people that are racing to and fro on Riverhead Highway and through Auckland, so many of them, they're really convinced. They're convinced they're going to live forever with the help of science. Even just prior to the industrial age, industrial revolution, people who were immersed in science were talking this way. "We will have to," Francis Bacon, "to torture nature's secrets from her." And he had a vision that people would be flying, they would be talking long distance through pipes and so on. So this is the mentality of Kali Yuga, to conquer nature, to enjoy. And if we can't conquer nature, we'll enjoy our senses to the fullest, and that will make us happy. And we can take shelter of such things. So this is what Prabhupada refers to as the great ocean of material nature. It is truly the great ocean. And Prabhupada also says that the living conditions are something like foaming bubbles. They come and they go, just like the bellows of soap. So everything that we see as primitive is like the bubbles, like the foam. It's unreal, it's temporary, it's not the real thing that we're looking for. People were paid probably tens of thousands of dollars a year to come up with a slogan, the real thing, for a software. But the real thing is, what we're all looking for, is Krishna consciousness, of course. But just see how the material world has twisted everything so badly. All the resources are being used to make us drink something that's like sugar water with a little bubble in it. There's a great love affair with this drink all over the world. The Prabhupada even refers to it specifically, says Coca-Cola. It's one of the few things he names by name. He terms it as a useless product. Here is an example of a useless product that everyone is in love with. That's the material world. It's a useless product, everyone's in love with it. So, Krishna consciousness is the process of transforming that natural, loving propensity to Krishna. From the material world to Krishna. And that's what the Srimad Bhagavatam does. It gives us knowledge of who Krishna is so that our love can be transferred. That's the nature of Krishna consciousness. And that's the charge of all devotees of Krishna. By hearing about and glorifying the Lord, all the person's activities become molded into spiritual activities. And thus, all conceptions of material miseries become completely vanquished. Srila Prabhupada said once, by a jovialness or jollity, happiness, one's spiritual consciousness can be measured. A politician in England, Cecil Parkinson, I think he became a minister, I don't know what he is now. He was the local member of parliament for our area in Watford, where we were staying in Temple of the Manor. And he came there once. Remember him? Anyway, he was one of the younger members of parliament, sort of up and coming, and I visited him once, and he told me that he had met some devotees on the train, and a couple of ladies, and he didn't want to talk to them at first because they were wearing saris and tilaks, and he thought they were very strange, but they just looked so happy that he had to speak with them. He had to, it was very infectious, and he said the happiness of all of you was very infectious. I want to congratulate you. I don't know what it is, but you're very happy. So anyone who's fixed on the spiritual world and the self within is internally happy and not dependent upon this material world for happiness. We don't know what is going to come in this material world. So we're not going to be elated or distressed. Sometimes we're worried about things, the war, the YK2. I read something yesterday about YK2, what was it? Oh, I know. It was the social services, the people that issue pension checks in America. They said that they were compliant with YK2, so people wouldn't have to worry, Social Security, about getting their checks or whatever. But we may read something just the opposite today. And somehow or other, devotees are transcendental to these things. Not that we don't take precaution, but they're not going to disturb or affect our lives. We're not going to become overly elated or overly depressed. So we'll stop there. We have some questions or comments. Persons devoid of Atmatapa do not inquire into the problems of life, being too attached to the fallible soldiers like the body, children, and wife. Although sufficiently experienced, they still do not see their inevitable destruction. Famous verse, yes.
Although it's said that the material world is false and temporary, sometimes temporary can seem like a very long time, and it's not so easy to live it that way. So then one of life says to me that you've been using a lot of time before the time of death, that it's very hard to become serious about spiritual life. So my question is how to realize it and how to be able to live more in such a way that one realizing that one's life is temporary.
Well, a very brief answer might be that we see this temporary world as a long-lasting world, you know, because we may live 5 years. It may seem like a long time for us, but if one is fixed in, is always remembering Krishna, which is not an easy thing to attain, then it's not such a long time. When I was in school, I read a book called 1-2-3 Infinity by a man named Gamma. It was something about mathematics. And the idea of 1-2-3 Infinity was that people who are uneducated and who can't count beyond three see everything beyond three as infinity. For us, it has to get up into the hundreds and thousands of millions before it becomes uncountable or infinity. So the idea is that for us who are limited, or for those, I shouldn't say us, we're supposed to be transcendentalists, but of course we are also limited. But for those who have no spiritual consciousness, it seems endless. And that's why some people want to commit suicide, because they think, oh, it's just never going to end, I'm going to suffer and suffer and suffer. Maybe if I just end the suffering somehow, there won't be any more suffering in this life or whatever. They don't know. They really don't know. So in one sense, it's due to our lack of spiritual intelligence, or due to our lack of intelligence. If we're really Krishna conscious, then we don't see this material world. This lifetime is a very long thing. It's like the flickering of an eye in a great expanse of time. This Krishna conscious philosophy is like a salve that kind of stops, you know, what's the word? It alleviates the burning of material life, which is very painful for us. Of course, the great acharyas, they give us many different hints and different ways in which we can fix ourselves on Krishna, in which we can cross over this great ocean of material existence and not be affected by it and not see it. It's so difficult. Rupa Goswami gives many instructions in his Nectar of Instruction. It's on his Chayataya, Tat Kara Pravartana. Sangha Tyaga Satovarte says that we should be always enthusiastic. Even if we don't feel enthusiastic, we should act enthusiastic, because if we jump and dance and play the mridanga and the kartals and scream Hare Krishna at the top of our voices, even though we don't want to, we don't feel like doing it, we're not enthusiastic, we will become enthusiastic. We will start jumping and dancing. We'll want to do it. We'll spontaneously desire to do it, because it's our nature. It's our actual nature, whether we want to or not. If we just do it, just do it. It's the same. I've seen my fellow's t-shirt. We'll feel very happy because it's natural. So, and then we have to be confident. We have to be sure that it's going to happen, that there is a spiritual world, that deity is actually Krishna, that he can actually hear us, that he can see us through his fingers. He's there. He's not just a statue. We have to be patient, Rupa Goswami says, because it might take, by our calculation, a long time. We may not be Krishna conscious today or tomorrow. It might take a few years. It might take a few lifetimes. But if that's what Krishna wants, we should be patient. We should be satisfied. We shouldn't be impatient. We shouldn't associate with people who are very materialistic, because they may think it's going to take a long time. They may be very attached to their hearth and home and their family. And that's not good to be in that association all the time. We should do everything. That karma, we should bow down when we come into the temple. We should offer prayers before eating. We should purify ourselves with water and bath. We should sleep at a certain time. We should offer prayers to Srila Prabhupada and all the previous acharyas. We should read regularly, chant. These are all the systems of our Parnashram Dharma, of our ultimate Dharma, which is surrender to Krishna. These are the parts of our Dharma that we execute daily. our activities, our duties, our actions. And we should try to, as Prabhupada said, mold our lives after Krishna consciousness. By following the footsteps of those who we look up to, our spiritual predecessors. They're explained, their lives are talked about, their accounts are given. We learn all about them, how they thought, what they did, where they went, how they acted, what they were doing, not how they were thinking. And various places they sometimes went on pilgrimage, even Balaram on a great pilgrimage. So we have to follow in their footsteps. Not that we imitate them, but it's not blindly, but it's just like someone was saying in class the other day, we can learn so much from devotees, even by mimicking them or copying them. It's not imitating, but it's following in their footsteps. We can learn from great sages. So we have the sadhus as part of our Guru Shastra Sadhu triangle of knowledge, gaining knowledge, the great triangle of knowledge. I think we have a question.
Maharaj, in regards to why to pay, you understand that you say devotees have to be transcendental to serve the things that happen to you, because it's just temporal. But I guess I'm reading a book about it at the moment, and it really is, it's saying to the citizens, you know, it's saying that it's quite a dangerous thing, a big situation coming up. So I'm just wondering how, as a leader, in our society, how you seem to say, well, you know, be precautious, take precautions, but you're not really saying, okay, let's get together, let's communicate, let's make a plan, let's do something. Do you think that's it's necessary to know what your view on it is?
My view is that without knowledge, we can't do anything. We don't know anything. We don't know how to even operate it. A sound system. So we read the manual. So then you're reading a book that is very good. Until there is a lot of reading and research done, it's hard to know what something like that is going to result in. Because we're talking about some computer glitch. It's a very material thing. And exactly what the result is going to be is unpredictable. It could be a worldwide collapse, it could be a partial collapse, it could be a 2 or 3 month collapse. I don't know, honestly don't know. But I will depend on people who, like you and others, who are doing the research. But we don't know when. And we just don't know. It's very hard to predict. Because there's a saying that you can't prepare for disaster. Of course, I don't fully subscribe to that. I think we do need to take precautions. Prabhupada was warned once about earthquakes. In a letter, he said that, the letter said that there were going to be earthquakes. The astrologers were predicting, and that the west coast of the United States would fall into the ocean. So in his letter back, Prabhupada said, we don't care if these astrologers aren't going to stay here. The doors of New York wanted them to come back to New York, I guess. But he said, if there are tremors, then we will take precautions. So it's not that he wasn't for taking precautions, but he wanted to know, wanted to have some more indication. Yeah?
I just follow my case. This way to get is to close at hand. But in order to take precautions, but and since the words will be known, definitely the impact will be what kind of precautions would you suggest?
Get enough gas, water, and food, and money and guns, maybe, to keep going for at least some time. Better questions? How to get a realization
to get the
Krishna is there.
Yeah,
with a few days? I mean, that's what our whole Krishna consciousness movement is directed towards, is to give us that realization. Chanting, reading, coming before the deity, dancing, respecting prasadam, associating with devotees, being as much in spiritual atmosphere as we can. we'll gradually get there. It just takes time. For some people, some people are already there. But for some of us, it's going to take a long time. I give myself at least a few lifetimes. Yes?
Where is the spaces talking about learning from our history, like you're talking about the other day? It's one of the issues that's sometimes discussed is that devotees are transcendental, so even if we transgress the mundane morality, maybe like stealing or something like that, it's okay if we use it for Krishna.
There's a statement in the, I don't have it right in hand, but the effect, and I can't quote word for word, in the Chaitanya Chaitanya Prabhupada towards one of the purports, where he says that as long as we're living in the material world, we have to abide by social conventions, that is the desire of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And of course in other places like the Bhagavad Gita, it states that we shouldn't be relying on the ordinary course of events. But if we look at the whole thing, again, we can, you know, take isolated statements, we can see that generally, Prabhupada did things in a very up-and-up, civilized, societal, conventional way. For example, I watched him give instructions to Shyama Sundar on how to keep books down to the penny. It's very important because, I mean, from a practical point of view, if accounting isn't done properly, there can be big trouble for us all. So, he gave that instruction and that example is in, and there was a thing of polygamy too. He was against that because he said it was against the laws of the land. So, you know, like taking the neighbor's flowers and speeding and things like that, they're really not really very useful. Even though we can say, well, it's for Krishna, you know, I had to get to the temple on time and we had to have some flowers for Krishna. But in the long term, it's really not a good idea because it costs money and we'll be troubled with police, it hurts our reputation, etc., etc. So we have to be careful when we say, well, I'm doing it for Krishna, and now we're breaking the law, and it's really not. Prabhupada said that we would be, one of his well-known sayings, and he said many times, is that we will be known for our truthfulness, we will be adored, and people will appreciate us for our honesty. So we have to be a little careful, but, you know, I mean, if we look at morality, and we can say that, you know, Prahlad killed his father, Krishna sported with unmarried gopis. You know, if we look at it from the mundane sense, there's so many things that happened. We could say are wrong, and what I did for Krishna, so it's okay, I can kill my father, I can have lots of girlfriends. The Prabhupada obviously didn't like that. So we just have to be a little cautious in understanding that surrender to Krishna is the highest morality. It's beyond mundane morality. But it doesn't mean that all mundane morality should be cast out the window. To be cautious in that, especially in an age in which Prabhupada quoted the Hindi verse, but the idea was that if you're a spiritual person and you do something, there's an infraction, no matter how small, it'll be like a black stain on a white tablecloth. It'll soil your reputation. And people will talk about it. So one has to be very careful. Sincere, one has to be very cautious. Especially for devotees of Krishna. One little thing wrong reflects on all of us.
Another related point is that, like for example, the other day you were talking about the importance of being vegetarian. And so we may not be breaking the principle ourselves, but we may be vegetarian. But if we're making a living from selling meat, is it still implications in it?
Well, every time you go to a store to buy vegetables, I mean, I don't know about these vegetable markets, but in a big store, they're also selling meat, so indirectly you're contributing to the meat industry.
I mean, if you run the business.
If you sell it yourself. Well, there's implication, but one of Prabhupada's initiated disciples was selling meat in the store. Prabhupada was informed, and he didn't stop him. Right then he said, later on we will discipline him. But I mean, that indication was that the karma was kind of spinning down and coming to an end.
It sounds hard to understand because it doesn't say in Shastra that, you know, the person who kills the animal, the person who eats, the person who sells, but all of these people are implicated in the karma.
Yeah. It was an exception. It's not just that Prabhupada was recommending it. You know, this would have to come to an end. So it's obviously something you don't want to do as a, you know, as a devotee. Again, if a person has an unadorable occupation, but is giving money to Krishna, that's a good thing. Most of the money we're getting to support this temple is probably coming from people eating meat. I mean, people buy books, they're eating meat. I don't know where the most money comes from. In a lot of temples, they're supported by Sankirtan. So, I mean, there's some benefit to helping. But as one becomes more and more Krishna conscious, certainly one doesn't want to do that, to be involved with buying or selling meat. Yes? How I met Srila Prabhupada? How about we'll have another class for that? Because that's very long. You can do that.
You say it.
Huh? You say it. Okay. Right. You say new life in Prince Goswami. So I think we'll end here. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.